listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Strange Tale of Howard Bone, Part 2. Last time, I told you about an interesting old man I met in the very early 80s, named Howard Bone, who told me that he had worked in carnivals for almost 4 decades as a roustabout, magician, and of particular interest to me, a fighter in carnival challenge matches. He came to my academy for a visit, where he regaled me with stories of his carnival days. I was so impressed and entertained that I told Howard he should write a book about his life. He waved his hands dismissively and said, "I'm not much of a writer." In any case, once the momentum of his storytelling wound down, he turned to me with a childlike gleam in his eye and asked, "So, young man, would you care to test your skills on me?" I was never one to pass up a chance to spar, especially at that time in my life, but Howard was a different case. On the one hand, he looked fragile to me, and I didn't want to hurt him. On the other hand, I knew better than to underestimate an opponent, any opponent. I had met dangerous old men before, but none of them had ever challenged me to a sparring match. In addition, I was curious to see if Howard was telling the truth about his fighting skills. "Sure," I replied, and began to put on some sparring gear. He then asked me if he could go without the gear, as it made it difficult for him to grab his opponent. "I'll be careful not to hit you too hard," he assured me. "That's fine," I replied. My first decade of sparring experience had been without gear, and the prospect didn't bother me. "I'll leave mine on if it's okay with you," I added. Howard agreed, took off his glasses and shoes, and joined me in the center of the sparring area. "What are the rules?" he asked. "I've never been big on rules," I replied. "Let's just have some fun and try not to hurt each other." Howard gave me a broad, partially toothy grin and said, "I like the sound of that." He bowed, I saluted, and this strange match was on. Howard took up a stance that looked well-balanced and held his arms in an unusual guard position. He kept both arms well extended toward me with his fingers also fully extended, a bit like a Wing Chun practitioner. His eyes were opened really wide, bulging with concentration. I circled. He stayed put, rotating to face me. I threw a probing sidekick to his lead leg. I landed the kick, but because I had held back much of its power, it left Howard based, balanced, and in range for a moment. That moment allowed him to try to grab my kicking leg. He came uncomfortably close to doing just that, momentarily snagging my foot. I had always encouraged my training partners to try to catch my kicks, and in this case I was able to use a trick I had developed to free my leg. Fact 1. Howard didn't seem to have much in the way of sophisticated footwork. Fact 2. He was quicker than he looked. Fact 3. He was much stronger than he looked. I faked the next kick low, and when Howard grabbed for it again, I redirected the kicking leg and tapped him on the side of the head with a roundhouse kick. Howard shook his head and laughed. "That was some trick. Can you do it again?" "Let's see," I replied. I circled him again. He rotated again to face me. I again faked a low kick and then faked the roundhouse kick to the head, figuring Howard would try to grab the second kick this time. He did just that, but I was one step ahead. I redirected my kicking leg a second time and threw a side kick to his midsection with it. I didn't hit him very hard, but his body was square to me and I landed the kick dead on his solar plexus. He let out a loud, "Oof!" and stopped to put his hands on his knees. I asked, "Are you okay? Was that too hard?" "No, that was fine. Just give me a minute to catch my breath." After a bit, he said, "In all my years of fighting, no one has ever used their legs on me like that." I pointed out to him that the Bill Wallace kicking method, which I had been obsessed with and had practiced for more than a few years, had, from Howard's perspective, only been fairly recently developed. I also mentioned that I had added Bruce Lee's concept of kicking below the waist to further round out my kicking game. Howard's fighting career had extended from the late 1940s to the early 60s. He probably hadn't seen much in the way of sophisticated kicking at all in those early years of American martial arts. It was no surprise that he hadn't seen it before. I asked if he was sure that he was all right. "I'm fine. That was just a good shot to the right spot. I can take a hit. I know that was nowhere near as hard as you could have kicked me." We picked the sparring back up and the match proceeded. During this match, Howard made a few quite respectable attempts at shooting in for a takedown. Although I never had had any formal wrestling training, my hometown of Evansville, Indiana, was and is to this day a hotbed of wrestling. I had already, by this point, been fortunate enough to have several fantastic wrestlers train under me, and we had played around more than a little bit with striking versus takedowns. They had taught me how to sprawl. The sprawl saved me each time Howard shot in. We didn't set a round timer. We just went until Howard got too tired to continue, and then went again after he rested. He surprised me by being able to go like this for more than several solid rounds. After we finished and Howard had rested, he said, "Your fancy kicks and footwork won't let me get close enough to show you what I know. Would you be so kind as to allow me to show you now?" I eagerly agreed, and Howard proceeded to show me that he indeed had good knowledge of joint locking, both standing and on the ground, and other self-defense skills. He also had a good working knowledge of how to use his elbows and knees, and how to throw a very good headbutt. Now, this was several years before I began training in Muay Thai, and about a decade before I started in Jiu-Jitsu. So my abilities in the clinch, and for that matter in grappling in general, were severely limited. I was doubly glad I hadn't allowed him to grab my leg or shoot in for a takedown. Now, I don't tell you this part of the story to pump up your image of me or my fighting ability. Rather, it is to contrast Howard's behavior and attitude with what might have been the case with someone who had been lying about their skills. He didn't act like someone who wanted to puff up an already overinflated ego and was then angry at being foiled by a younger or quicker fighter. Instead, Howard genuinely seemed to enjoy the experience, the whole experience, whether he was getting the worst end of some light sparring or showing off his own skills. Rather than striking me as an arrogant wannabe, he seemed more to be a fellow lover of the martial arts, much like me, just older. Howard appreciated a good opponent rather than resenting him. For my part, I respected the fact that he had the courage to ask me to mix it up with him a bit. Many a younger man had gone on at length with me in the past about how good he was, and then made an excuse that he couldn't spar with me when I politely asked him if he'd like to. Howard and I spent much more time together after that first meeting. For a while, he became a regular fixture at my academy. Sometimes, he joined in sparring with me and my students. Other times, he might show a technique that he liked. But mostly, he just hung out. It was clear to me that he liked the company of martial artists and enjoyed being recognized and appreciated as one himself. It also became apparent that he was lonely. As time passed, Howard participated less and less in training or sparring and spent more of his time just hanging out. After a few years, we had already heard most of his stories many times. Like a lonely elderly relative, he was definitely capable of making a nuisance of himself. Perhaps sensing this, over subsequent months and years, Howard spread his attention to other martial arts schools and boxing clubs in the area, with varying degrees of success. It was not uncommon for me to get a phone call from another school, checking Howard's story that he knew me, and wondering what the deal was with this weird old guy. I would do my best to assure them that Howard was harmless and entertaining, again with varying degrees of success. One friend of mine, who taught kung fu at a high-end athletic club, told me that the club officials took one look at Howard and forbade my friend from allowing him back in the building, saying that they didn't want their customers to be scared off by a tobacco-chewing, tattooed wonder. One day, when I had not seen him for quite a long while, Howard walked into my academy and bowed formally to me. I was in the middle of teaching a class, but I excused myself and greeted him. "Please be so kind as to excuse the rudeness of this interruption," he began, producing a document that looked like some sort of certificate. Howard pulled himself upright and solemnly intoned, "It is my pleasure to award you with the rank of 4th-degree black belt in Ito Ryu Jitsu." He solemnly handed the certificate to me. This was simultaneously awkward and touching. While I had learned a few techniques from Howard, we never had a real teacher-student relationship either way. My students stood staring like deer in the headlights, some with their mouths open. Most of them had never met or heard of Howard and were thus quite puzzled by the proceedings. I figured it was best to get this over with quickly without being unkind. "Thank you, Howard. I'm honored that you think me deserving of this." I saluted him, and he bowed back. I instructed my class to salute him, and he bowed back to them. I then gently reminded Howard that I needed to get back to teaching my class. He thanked me and said that he couldn't stay. I thanked him again, he bowed again, and left quietly. I have never displayed the certificate Howard gave me that day. It's in my filing cabinet, along with 45 years' worth of other martial arts memorabilia. Later, after an interval of some years, Howard came into my academy, beaming. This was not during a class period, so I had time to talk with him. "Have you ever heard of Penn and Teller?" he asked me almost breathlessly. Although they weren't yet as famous as they would later become, Penn and Teller were already quite well known, and I was a huge fan, which I told Howard. He went on, "I met them a while back, and they were kind enough to write a magazine article about yours truly." It was a genuine pleasure to see Howard as happy as I had ever seen him. He had introduced himself to Penn and Teller when they were performing in Springfield, Illinois, and they seemed to like him right away. Just as I had had the pleasurable experience of meeting an old fighter, they had had the pleasurable experience of meeting an old stage magician. It was Teller, ironically the one who never speaks, who wrote the article for the April 1995 edition of Atlantic Monthly magazine. The title was "The Incredible Mr. Bone." Penn and Teller also urged Howard to write a book or books detailing his life in the carnival and about stage magic. He took their advice. His biography is entitled "Sideshow: My Life with Geeks, Freaks, and Vagabonds in the Carny Trade." His book on magic is entitled "Hurry, Hurry," and was published under the pen name Colonel Don E. Kerr. This was an example of Howard's strange sense of humor. In carnival slang, a doniker is a restroom or toilet. As subsequent years went by, I got fewer and fewer visits from Howard, but I was always glad to see him when he chose to drop by. I want to be clear and neither overstate nor understate Howard's skill level as a martial artist. While he was very tough and a quite functional fighter for his day, he displayed nowhere near the sophistication I was to see in my future as I expanded my own martial arts knowledge and experience. He claimed that he was a 9th-degree grandmaster in the art of Ito Ryu Jitsu. I don't know enough to speak one way or another about whether this art really even exists, and if it does, if Howard actually held that rank. I do tend to believe him when he claims to have been a carnival fighter. He was, at the time I met him, just about my age now, which is just short of 60, and he could still competently scrap with most people. I know from personal experience what aging does to the body, and I don't think Howard took as good care of his body as I have tried to with mine. He definitely had trouble handling attacks from a trained kickboxer, but against untrained, fairly committed attacks, even from good athletes, he did very well indeed. Odd-looking, unobtrusive old Howard Bone had been essentially a somewhat primitive but effective MMA fighter almost 50 years before the creation of MMA. He would have been a surprise and a nightmare for most unsuspecting street thugs foolish enough to bother him. On a sad day in 1997, word got to me that Howard had passed away in a VA hospital. Some of the props from his magic act were given posthumously to the American Museum of Magic. Howard was a strange mix of carefully cultivated politeness and blue-collar cussedness. He was always meticulously polite to me, I suppose because he respected me. But he also frequently said to me that after he died, he wanted to be buried face down so that, quote, the world can kiss my ass, unquote. Well, those sentiments aside, I hope this podcast contributes in some small way to good memories of Howard Bone. Fighter, magician, carnival hand, veteran, and friend. He was tough, but not invincible. Cantankerous, but not mean. Proud, but not pompous. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, or check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.